Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And it's time now for our weekly gathering, and I'm joined in the studio by Rose Conway-Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo and party spokesperson on higher and further education. Michelle Murphy is here, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland. Paul McAuliffe, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West and party spokesperson on local government. And we're also joined by Professor John O'Brennan, who's the John Monnet Professor of European Integration at Maynooth University. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being here today. Paul, I'll start with you because at the start of the programme, we were talking about this trip to Dubai taken by the Secretary General of the Department of Health, Robert Watt, and the Minister for Health. Now, I'm sure they're doing, they're very busy over there doing government business, but is the timing right?
Yeah, well, I suppose I saw the headlines this morning and then I read the article. I suppose it's not a conference that's a standalone conference. It's obviously part of the International Expo. Ireland has a pavilion at that, and throughout the 6 months we'll fill the pavilion with different events. So there will be many ministers travelling out to the pavilion, and we will have international people from all across the world visiting that pavilion.
John McGuinness this morning said, look, trade trips are important, but it is not the job for of the Minister for Health and his Secretary General to go to this. It's not his responsibility. It should be coming from enterprise, trade and employment.
Well, I think if it was specific to do with investment and enterprise, then that would be correct. My understanding is that for this period of the Pavilions programme, it relates to health and wellbeing, and it's appropriate in this case.
So you're happy enough, Rose, you're shaking your head.
This is just crazy. Like, when I heard this morning, I thought it was some kind of a bad joke. And I think what it really demonstrates is the absolute disconnect. We look at what's happened this week. First, in terms of Robert Watt and his 87,000 increase. He won't, I think he won't come before the Finance Committee. I think John McGuinness is right. But he can go out to Dubai. And then we have the situation with the Minister for Health, and we have what happened in Kerry this week and the absolute scandal there around CAMHS and the hundreds of children and families who've been impacted by that. So for the minister to be out in Dubai when all this is happening, if he wants to know about health and well-being, he should speak to some of the carers that he won't even give €1,000 COVID payment to. It's just so wrong.
I think
wrong.
Rose is conflating a whole heap of issues. We either
these are real issues. No, you know, they're real issues that are impacting on people.
I'm not deleting them anyway. We either accept that Ireland engages with other European countries and countries around the world, or we accept that they don't. And it is necessary for all countries to work together to engage on different trips. If you believe that they should do that over Zoom or whether they should do that in person, they're two different things. No. I accept the timing on the CAMHS is really crucial because we should talk about CAMHS. But Minister Mary Butler has been one of the lead people on the issue of mental health.
The Minister The Minister for Health is the minister that's in charge. And Robert Watt, I just cannot get over the arrogance of it. I really think that the arrogance of this of being out in Dubai when so many people are suffering in this country,
Rose, you're
and particularly
to
in relation
like the,
to
like
access
you're trying
to health.
Like the two lads are on some sort of free holiday. First of all,
but
they're both paid
they
enough
here?
To pay for their own holidays.
But they certainly
Secondly,
are paid
they've
enough.
Spent
we'll
more
agree
time
that.
With each other for the last 2 years. I imagine they'd like to be spending time apart. No, they're over there on business. They're doing a function and they'll return.
I think you're completely missing this. I think the disconnect is just, it's unsurpassed.
Okay, well, look,
let's
take this away from politics and bring it to Michelle Murphy from Social Justice Ireland. Do you see it as Rose does? That this is just wrong at this particular time?
Well, I think the timing is incredibly unfortunate. I mean, we're coming out of a pandemic into an endemic. And if there was a survey of 35 countries in their healthcare systems last year, and in terms of accessibility, Ireland came bottom. And there were 181,000 people last March waiting more than 18 months for treatment. Those are the kind of things that the Secretary General of the Department and the Minister for Health need to be focusing on now. We have the CAMHS issue, and even if Ireland met its waiting list target time of 18 months, we would still have the worst waiting times in Europe. So those are the things that the healthcare system needs to grapple with now as we move into the endemic phase of COVID. There's also the issue of the rollout of Sláintecare, the community healthcare networks, dealing with the governance and structural issues that seem to be endemic
Those problems, Michelle, will be there next week. Mm. So is it okay this week for the Minister and his Secretary General to be in Dubai?
Well, I certainly, as someone who engages with policy and politicians, don't see the need for the Minister and the Secretary General to travel to an expo on health and well-being. There's an entire Department of Health with civil servants who are engaged in these issues, who can represent the country. I think the timing is really, really unfortunate. I think there is far more important things going on in the healthcare system rather than travelling to an expo in Dubai.
Okay, John O'Brien, what do you think?
Well, I think the optics of this, Claire, are simply terrible for the Department of Health and for the government. And the bigger issue, I think, is about Mr. Watt's salary. He is now taking home a salary of €292,000. That's 80,000 more than all the other secretaries general. And going forward, I think it presents a real problem at the higher levels in the civil service, because secretary generals are supposed to be at exactly the same level. You could clearly envisage a situation in the near future where some ambitious, high-flying civil servant is going to create a row because the precedent has been established by this case. So I think the implications of this for the civil service are very significant, and that really hasn't got enough attention. Leo Varadkar came out the other day and he said that this was a private matter. It isn't. Robert Wart is a public servant, one of the most senior public servants we have, and his salary is a matter of public concern. I think that's the big issue. I think it's really regrettable that he has not gone before the Oireachtas. I think he should, and I think he should explain himself to the Oireachtas and why he's worth that extra €80,000 that other senior civil servants are not getting.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And Paul, John McGuinness, I don't know if you've had a chance to read his piece in The Examiner this morning, saying that for him, in general and across the board, civil servants at this level have way too much power. He's saying that they are in control, the politicians are not, to the point where, as Rose said earlier, they're refusing to appear before committees.
Yeah, I don't disagree with John. I think much of the challenges that this government will have will not be passing the legislation or passing budgets relating to investing in our public services and so on. It'll be the delivery of them. And that comes down to the Secretary Generals of each department. It comes down to agencies. And I would agree with John. I think there needs to be far more accountability across the whole public services for the delivery of government programmes and government priorities. We've seen, I suppose, two Secretary Generals now in the headlines this week. The Department of Foreign Affairs Secretary General has been in it for some weeks. These are very senior paid public officials. The accountability ultimately lands with the former
Secretary General of the Department, who's gone on now to Paris.
And the current ambassador of Ireland to France.
Yeah. And what are you saying should happen then? I mean, do you agree with John McGuinness when he makes the point? Let's talk about Champagne Gate, the alleged Champagne Gate party, right? He makes the point that Simon Coveney has been taking the flak for that. But actually, the responsibility for it lies with the former Secretary General of that department, Niall Burgess.
Yeah, look, there was, I saw four decisions there. There was a decision to bring people from remote work to being in the building. There was a decision to celebrate. There was a decision to take a photograph without social distancing. And then there was a decision to tweet it. It appears that almost all of those decisions were made by the Secretary General of the department. And I think that makes it very difficult for anybody at a lower level in the department then to express concerns about whether that was an appropriate thing to do or not. There is an investigation that's taken place. I think many of the facts are already known. And I think there should be accountability at the very highest level for what happened there. Yeah. It was a decision by the Secretary General. It involves HR decisions within the department. It's not a political decision, and there should be accountability.
Are you shaking your head because you think it is the responsibility of the minister?
I do. Who's in charge here? You know, is there any need for the government if it's the Secretary Generals that are making all the decision and they're not accountable to anybody? The government are accountable to the people, and they have to explain these decisions, and they're not doing it in this case. And, you know, the fact that Robert Watt wouldn't come down to the Finance Committee, I have sat across him, mind you, in the Finance Committee before, and I certainly wasn't impressed in terms of his accountability and the questions that he wouldn't answer. But now the government won't answer any questions, and they're throwing their hands in the air and basically saying, well, it's nothing to do with us, it's the sections of the department.
Well,
and that cannot.
The minister
continue.
Has asked for a report to be done on this event. He has taken that action, hasn't he?
Yeah, but a report to be done on it, and who does the report and what comes out of that, and is that just kicking the can down the road again? You know, the book has to stop somewhere. And it seems like in so many of these things, it doesn't stop. And now we see them both out in Dubai when there's so many things to be fixed there. And I really just think, I feel so much for the Kerry families. And I know there are many other families. And I think when they do this deep dive or this audit across the country in terms of CAMHS and mental health services, they will uncover an awful lot more. And I think the minister and Robert Watt would be much better served in talking to the people on the ground who are impacted by the decisions that they are making or the decisions that they're not making, and the absolute impact of the unaccountability of this government. Mm-hmm. It's disgraceful.
John O'Brien, can I come to you on that, the CAMHS report, which shocked so many people this week? And government will tell us time and time again, when it comes to issues within the health service, it's not a question of money, it's not a question of budget, the funding is there. So what is the problem?
Well, like others, I saw Minister Butler on the airwaves the other night, and I thought she was kind of grappling honestly with the problem. The audit that they're doing of the 72 services, I think, will be very important. The Taoiseach said it was a damning indictment of the service, and I think he's absolutely right. I think we have to wait for a conclusive sort of macro audit of the system, Clare, to make any kind of systemic observations. But I think it does tell us that there are all these gaps in the system, and they're particularly there when it comes to mental health, and particularly so when it comes to the mental health of young people. I think that's one of the things that the COVID crisis actually not just exposed, but exacerbated. So I hope that on the back of this, one of the things we'll do is a serious audit of the different services provided by the state, in particular these areas around mental health, and that where these deficits are identified, deficits of staff and resources, and particularly that of oversight, because I think that's the most important finding, the auditing and oversight.
Yeah, I've just made a note of a letter in the Irish Times today from a woman called Dr. Maria Dunn, and she says, I'm the parent of a child with additional educational needs. I'm also a consultant child psychiatrist. And she ends her letter by saying, this is not just about a single doctor, a single consultant, a single team. This is about how we value, manage and govern mental health services for the good of our service users. And Michelle, I think that's very telling from somebody who works both in the system and uses the system as well.
It is very telling. And there was a report published last year by UNICEF looking at child well-being and child health across, I suppose, developed wealthy countries. And in terms of children's mental health, Ireland came 26th out of 41. We've 73 CAMHS teams. There was a commitment to 129. Last year, there were over 2,100 children and young people waiting for an appointment. 1 in 10 were waiting for over a year. 1 in 3 were waiting for more than 6 months. What happened in South Kerry, it's an absolute travesty. And the challenge, you know, seems to be in terms of oversight and in terms of staffing. The Mental Health Commission has highlighted how the current system that we have, and remember the CAMHS teams don't fall under that commission, it's ad hoc, it's sporadic, it lacks integration. So there's a huge challenge there now. And it goes back to the point about ultimately who is responsible for the oversight here. Is it the Secretary General of the department? Like, who is going to take responsibility for this? Is it the Minister, the Secretary General? And that's not just within the HSE. It goes back to the other issues we were discussing earlier. Who is going to take responsibility for this to make sure that those posts are filled by people who are qualified to fill those posts? I think it's important to remember that that junior doctor didn't have the necessary specialised qualifications for that post. So are we going to, what is it within the system that stops us developing people with those qualifications? And then why are we unable to fill the posts here? And ultimately, who is going to be responsible for the oversight? And who is going to be able to, I suppose, reassure families up and down the country this morning who are concerned about their children and teenagers in their families? Are they getting the right treatment? Or if they have to engage with that service in the future, are they going to be confident that those children and young people are getting the services that they require, that they have access to out-of-hours services, and they don't have to, at a weekend or out-of-hours, go to an A&E department, to a general hospital, or be treated in an adult acute unit, okay, for example?
Paul, just a word from you on this. I was listening to Niall Muldoon, the Children's Ombudsman, saying that the families who are using these services are at their lowest ebb. They've reached out for help to CAMHS for a reason, and then they probably have had to wait for 12 to 18 months. Now, if they're in the system, they're wondering, are they getting the correct treatment?
Yeah, and I'd say there's many families who are currently engaging with CAMHS who are incredibly worried about what happened in Kerry. But like even in my clinic today, I had people who were seeking help from CAMHS. I think there's a broader issue about mental health. A Vision for Change has been one document. But for example, we spent over 1.1 billion euro on mental health in our budget, and yet we've no director for mental health within the HSC. It's clear here that governance and clinical governance was required in this case. We don't have enough consultants. That was very obvious, one of the failings in the report. I wanted to make sure that when this audit is done, that we do address those issues, as Michelle said. Yeah. Sorry, that the key post. Why can we not get that pipeline of people who are willing to take up consultant posts? Some of it is to do with the workload and the lack of resources in it. I suppose two areas that Fianna Fáil wanted to make an impact on in this government were health and housing. The first 2 years of it have been predominantly dealt with by COVID. I have no doubt that that is where we want to see our impact happen. We've increased the public spending, some of which will be embedded now in our public health system. So spending has been increased.
We're told that the system is awash with money. That's what I hear all the time when I ask politicians about this. So what is going wrong?
Well, look, I wouldn't use the phrase.
They're not doing the evaluations. So it's all right to come into the hall and say, well, it's so many million for something. Then people are on the ground and people cannot get a simple appointment or an assessment, an appointment with CAMHS or whatever else it might be. The money isn't getting to the right places. And that really is the job of the Secretary General as well and the Minister to make sure that it does, to measure the outcomes. We're not measuring the outcomes. We're just kind of giving the inputs of what it is without ever thinking it's going to the right places.
Why aren't place to work, and that's to do with the terms and conditions, the hours, the workload. Something has to be done to alleviate
the burden. Because
the
money obviously isn't getting.
But Claire, I wouldn't underestimate the effort and energy that Minister Mary Butler has put into this. I've heard that back from the sector. I know she wants to see long term change. Some of the things which we've done during the pandemic, I think, can be embedded. But I really do feel that Director of Mental Health would give that leadership within the organisation. And I think once this audit is done, we do need to look at how we recruit and retain consultants.
A lot of talk this week as well about the cost of living, and conversations around this led to a fairly fraught row between Mary Lou MacDonald and Micheál Martin in the Dáil during leaders' questions this week. I think we can hear a clip of that now.
Don't you dare talk to me about false narratives or claim that you understand the crisis. You clearly don't. While you're there scratching your head, I've told you two things you can do that will work. And then we might believe, and more importantly, generation rent and renters might believe that you finally get it.
Deputy, you say that you'll finally get it. You paint a narrative in terms of me. I've been divorced from reality and all of that. Yeah, OK. I just want to say to you, Deputy, my background and where I grew up and what we had to put up with was far different to yours. OK? I just want to make this point. I didn't interrupt you. No.
Interruption, please.
Don't you dare lecture me. OK? I understand the realities of life as well as anybody else in this house, and I don't intend to understand it more. But I know a thing or two about people being in difficulty and challenging in their early lives in terms of cost of living and so on, and in terms of backgrounds.
So, it's a fairly fraught exchange there. Rose Conway-Walsh, why is Sinn Féin trying to portray a man who was raised in a council house in Cork as being an elite or somebody who wouldn't understand when people are under pressure?
Because what he's doing shows that he doesn't understand, that he really doesn't get it, that he doesn't understand the realities of life, because I believe if he did, he would be doing a lot more around health and around housing, as they were talking about there, and responding to it. So that is why. And then for him to come out and just make snide marks about Mary Lou MacDonald, he doesn't know anything about Mary Lou MacDonald's personal life.
But she showed him a picture of an apartment and said, this is 900 and something a month, a snip for you. I mean, when you talk about snide comments, it's coming from both sides. And when everyone heard that clip there, it's not just one-sided, is it?
No, I think he needs to answer the questions. I sit in there time after time. I'm waiting for the answer to the questions. Many people around the country are waiting for the answers to the questions. Why won't they answer the questions? So when simple questions are put to either the Taoiseach or the Taoiseach, they go off at a tangent, just making remarks like that. And then you get those type of exchanges. And what Mary Lou McDonald was shown, that somebody could lie in the bed and close the door, I think it was, with their toe in terms of, and paying hundreds and hundreds of euro a month.
Which is a completely reasonable point to make. Yes. I mean, it's outrageous for anyone to ask for 900 euro and that the country is in such a state that is happening. Mm. But that's one thing, and seeking answers is one thing. But to cast somebody as being part of an elite is quite another.
Well, I think in how people are judged and how they perform in government, and it would show that they are removed. I think the point that she was making is that that he and the government are out of touch, and that they're removed from the realities of everyday life of what people are suffering across this country.
Now, Paul, we used that clip yesterday when Evelyn O'Rourke went out and spoke to people who cannot pay for their heating, and they have to decide, do I heat the house or do I buy food for the week? And we use that clip to show that that sort of showboating on the floor of the house does nothing for people like Gemma, a mother of three, who's having to make those decisions today.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree.
But it wasn't just Mary Lou who was engaging in that.
No, but look, I'm in a difficult position here, and many Fianna Fáil members say to me, why are we talking about Sinn Féin all the time? We should be talking about the solutions. We should be talking about what we're actually doing in government. And I could stand here for half an hour talking about all the legislation we've passed on housing to try and make housing more affordable, and that will have an impact. But the difficulty is, and clearly what happened here, the Taoiseach was irked by the continuous use by Sinn Féin of this elite playbook. Some people have called it Trumpian. I'm not going to use that word, but they are clearly in their 1 minute clips on Facebook trying to paint this government as being uncaring, out of touch. We saw Eoin Ó'Brien this week tweet a photograph of billionaire Monty Burns from The Simpsons, suggesting that Micheál Martin was out of touch like Monty Burns was. Like, I have a lot of respect for Eoin Ó'Brien. I was really disappointed when I saw that. If I had tweeted a picture of Mary Lou McDonald as a character from The Simpsons, Selma or Patty or whatever, I think people will be calling on me to resign today.
I think there's been enough said about Mary Lou McDonald and social media and other places, but I really do think, Paul, I mean...
Was it wrong, Rose? The things that were said about Mary, when she was characterised as a witch, was that wrong?
Of course it was wrong.
And so was it right for Eoin Ó'Brien to caricature Micheál Martin as a villain from a cartoon?
I didn't see that, and I would never like to make politics personal, but I do
so
think
you
it would
disagree
help
with
an
it?
Awful lot, Paul. I think it would help an awful lot to the chamber.
Is this what politics in Ireland is now?
I think this is the challenge. We're having this discussion now, but we're not talking about the impact on people. Mm. Like between 2010 and 2020, electricity and gas prices rose by 29%. That's not taking into account the price rises in 2021. You've people on social welfare who, before Budget 2022, were 2 years without an increase in the core rates on a fixed income, dealing with an increased cost of living. So they were having to pay increased energy prices and cutting back elsewhere. And the reality is, despite the increases in the budget, the Parliamentary Budget Office did an analysis of social welfare rates since 2011. So the real value of the job seekers rate of 208 euros is actually 193 euros today. And the real value of the contributory pension rate is not 253 euros, it's 234. That is the reality and the lived reality for people. And those are people on social welfare, where you're looking at people on low incomes and low paid jobs. There's 1.2 million of them who only gained 2 euros 30 a week out of the budget. And now they're faced with an increased cost of living on a daily basis and overnight, 2 to 3 cents a litre of petrol. So then you look at the knock-on impact on rural households. And we know that the CPI sort of underestimates the impact of the real cost of living increases, both on renters, low-income families, and then also people in rural areas. And yet we're here talking about a discussion in the Dáil that's not going to help any of these people.
Okay.
If you want to help these people, you need to look at indexing, benchmarking.
Well, Claire, I would argue.
I just want to bring, I let you in there, I want to bring in John O'Brien, and then I'll allow you to respond, Paul, absolutely. John O'Brien, what's your take on all of this? So you have what's happening in the Dáil and the reality on the ground. I mean, they're both intertwined, surely.
Definitely, Claire. Politicians, I think, more than ever these days, are inclined to flick the switch to vaudeville, especially at sessions like Leaders' Questions. And those sort of packages go out, those sharp exchanges that we heard a little bit earlier, the Taoiseach and Mary Lou MacDonald. But I think the real problem for the government is that there is such a deficit in respect of housing, and the Housing for All strategy introduced last September is improving the situation, but not at a sufficient pace that it actually brings some advantages to government. The plan is for 300,000 units by 2030, 33,000 units per year by 2024. We're a long way short of that. However, if you look at what's happening on the ground, there's been a really strong pickup in construction. There's been a really important increase in the number of apprentices registered, for example. All of that, I think, is going to make a difference, but it's slow and it's protracted. And you're absolutely right that those individual cases highlighted in the Dáil are really important, and the opposition will continue to make hay, I think, for some years to come out of this.
Paul?
Yeah, and I think that's what we do need to focus on. I think part of the sort of pantomime that the opposition are engaging in is because I think they do see some of the solutions coming down the track in housing. So, for example, the cost rental model is a significant shift.
Well, you're saying they're worried you might fix it.
Well, I absolutely do. Like, if you look at the cost rental...
Paul.
Can I interrupt you, first of all, because I'm engaging in that pantomime again. Let's talk about the solutions. Cost rental will deliver a new form of renting in Ireland. It's a public form of public housing which will provide affordable rental. We are constructing affordable purchase homes, and we're constructing social homes. All three of them will, as John said, will reduce the cost of housing, and we're doing the same in childcare.
I'm going to stop you there because before the end of our time, I want to talk to John O'Brien about something that we have covered right throughout the week and people have been talking about, and this is the fact that the Russians are going to carry out these military exercises, John, we know off the southwest coast. We've been talking to Patrick Murphy. He and his colleagues plan to go out and fish on the days that the Russians will be in town. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a terrible idea, and I don't think they should do it. I think they've actually made their point already. We know what the issue is, and because we're in such a febrile atmosphere in Russia's relationship with the West, and Ireland, one way or another, is part of the West, as part of the European Union, I think what they're risking in going into our territorial waters, where the Russians are conducting live fire exercises, where they could be at war within a matter of weeks in Ukraine, I think it's a really dreadful idea, and I don't think they should do it.
So you're concerned for their safety?
Absolutely, Claire. There's a seriousness of purpose about what the Russians are doing. They're engaged in a force projection that is designed to convince Russia, to convince the European Union and NATO that they are a serious adversary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that is about gaining leverage in the negotiations with the United States and other NATO partners. But I think what this whole episode has demonstrated, Claire, is just the incredible weakness of our defence structures. Part of it is personnel and the dismal morale within the defence forces. I met a man yesterday in Maynooth who had been in the service for 30 years. He left 3 years ago. He hadn't been paid for 6 months because of the dysfunction in the payroll service at that time. We rely on the RAF to protect our skies. So all of this undermines our sovereignty, I think, and demonstrates just how neglectful successive governments have been in the area of defence. We have to get serious about defence, not least because Ireland has become a critical part of the whole world of data and intelligence. And one of the reasons that the Russians are really focused on exposing Ireland as the sort of weak underbelly of defence and security in Europe is precisely because of the presence in Ireland of so many of the big tech behemoths.
All right, we are just out of time. Before we go, would you advise our politicians here, would you advise the fishermen to stand down, don't go out into those waters off the southwest next week, Paul?
I respect them for what they're doing. I think it's not our territorial waters, but it is their exclusive economic area. It's where they fish. I think they've a right to go out there. I think they're making their point.
But it might be unsafe.
I think it was very clear from listening to Patrick earlier that they intend to do that in a way that is safe. But yes. I respect them.
I mean, on that, I agree with Paul. Yeah, I absolutely have respect for the fishermen. But I do think that the that needs to be backed up by the government as well and making it very clear. And we have a role on the UN Security Council that needs to be used. We need to do everything we possibly can to de-escalate the situation.
We've got to leave it there. Rose Conway-Walsh, Paul McCall of Michelle Murphy and John O'Brien. Thank you all very much indeed.
Today with Clareburn. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.